Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
That's the Mike Jones duo playing us in today. Just two. Usually it's a big band with horns and everything. That's just two people. The brilliant Mike Jones. And then,
I thought that was Vince Guaraldi.
Oh, don't say that, please. Because you know one thing about jazz.
That's it.
That's the only thing you know
that's
about jazz.
That's what it sounded like to
Anytime
me.
Anytime it's piano and bass, that's so insulting.
I'm sorry.
Okay?
I didn't mean it to be insulting.
The Charlie Brown music is not good. You know, it's not the epitome of jazz. That's
it
Mike
is
Jones.
For me.
Man, those
My favorite song is The Hard Knock Life from Annie. Okay, I just want to tell you that now, just so that we get that out in the open.
You have such bad musical taste.
Just full disclosure.
On Free FM, where people are allowed to say anything they want except Michael Goudreau better shut his goddamn mouth about jazz. That kind of ignorance flowing out. I think that's what we'll say. Free FM, say whatever you want, except Michael Goudreau cannot. Vince Guaraldi.
I should not be talking
you
music.
Rat bastard.
I should never speak of my musical taste.
No, you should never.
Never
speak of your musical taste.
I'm a very fine juggler.
866-313-FREE-3733. What I'd like to talk about most on the show today, although I don't know if there's any controversy to talk about, but if people want to call in and talk about Tiktaalik, I would love that. Am I saying that right?
Tiktaalik, yeah.
Tiktaalik. I'm doing the accent on that.
I think
that.
The da is the big, one. Tiktaalik.
Well, just an accent on that. Tiktaalik.
Right. Okay.
And Tiktaalik is the fish that walks. And Michael Goudreau was tickled pink by the fact that they asked the Inuit people to name the fish that
the
walks.
Nunavut people.
The Nunavut people. Not the Inuit people?
Not the Inuit. No, the Nunavut.
The Nunavut people. Ask them to name it, you know, as a part of a big kind of honor that they were going to bestow upon the native people of that area, because they found this fossil way up where it's cold. Since we don't really know where fossils are, I guess we do know where fossils are, right?
They're in rocks.
I know, but I mean, wouldn't you look like someplace like, you know, the Caribbean?
Yeah, somewhere pleasant.
Exactly. But they're looking up near the Arctic Circle.
We're looking for specific conditions.
And they found this this fossil of a real missing link between fish and land animals.
One of those missing transitional fossils.
The ones that the creationists
say. 7 to 9 feet.
Don't exist.
That's what they said.
7 to 9 feet?
Yeah, I think that's what they said.
Really?
I think so.
Because I thought it was littler. I thought it was much littler.
No, it's pretty big.
Okay, 7 to 9 feet. Like an alligator.
Between 4 to 9 feet. Okay, so I'm wrong on the bottom number. 4 to 9 feet long alligator head.
Alligator.
Lungs and gills.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lungs and gills.
Lungs and gills.
Man, that costs a lot extra at the brothels in Vegas. If you want lungs and gills. Oof. Yeah. So if you have anything to say about that, I mean, I wonder.
We never
got
to the naming part.
Yes, I did. I said they asked the native people to name it, and they named it Tiktaalik, which is a really sexy, weird, great-sounding name.
Right.
And it turns out that in their language it means fish that walks.
Large, shallow water fish. I said, it's like asking your kid to name the dog and him saying, how about we call him Dog?
Exactly. Tiktaalik. Tiktaalik.
It's exotic because we don't speak Nunavik. Nunavik. Nunavut.
Tiktaalik. Tiktaalik is, but that doesn't make any difference. You know, the front page of the New York Times and has this whole thing about how, you know, this is the missing link and big deal and stuff. But it's not like the creationists.
What a shock, huh?
It's not like the creationists are going to go, oh, yeah, you found it. All right, evolution. Because what they're talking about is not science, it's faith. So the science doesn't make any difference. It's a god of the margins. But if anyone wants to call in and talk about Tiktaalik, I would love to talk about that. If you got anything to say other than woohoo, although even if you want to call up and go woohoo, that's cool with me. 866-313-FREE, that's 3733. PennRadio@gmail.com. That's PennRadio at gmail.com. PennRadio.com. You can write in. We also want to talk about how Superman took out the Klan. The Ku Klux Klan was pretty much defeated by Superman.
Isn't that the greatest thing ever?
Yeah. And Sam Harris talks about this in an interview, and I'm going to get to that in a moment, too. But I want to just clean up all business. Yesterday, when we left our protagonist, Penn Jillette, he was on his way to play poker at Queer Eye.
That's right.
I did play poker, and I wanted to report on that. What happened was the Queer Eye folks, who are rat bastards that we hate. We hate the Queer Eye guys because 2 years in a row, the Queer Eye guys, the four of them, beat our show Bulls Hit in the Emmy. So they have beat us twice, proving that if you've got four guys to deliver sexual favors to the judges, you do better than two guys willing to deliver sexual favors. They just put on their Hollywood sandals and went and won the Emmy. And he pretty much said that to me. I was talking to Tom, and Tom is the interior decorator. We were talking about Boy Scouts, and he was saying he loved Boy Scouts, except they didn't have an interior decorating merit badge. So Tom and I were joking around, and then I had to go out and play poker. See, they did a makeover of a poker guy. And I think this often happens. I've never seen the show Queer Eye because they're enemies of ours, mortal enemies. They fought us for the Emmy, and they won. We fought the queers, and the queers won.
They pushed me out of the way on the red carpet.
Did they?
They did. Ah. The photographers were going, get out of the way, get out of the way. We want to take pictures of the Queer Eye guys. Who are you?
It just goes to show
depressing.
You. But I told them that I was very happy that Bareback Mountain lost a crash.
Just and a little bit of hit you.
A little bit of retribution. He didn't hit me. There was no hitting. No hitting. So they took this guy, this straight guy, and they did a makeover on him. And they showed me the picture before and the picture after. And before, he kind of had like a scruffy, like Bob Dylan, New Morning beard, you know, and these kind of wire-rim glasses and kind of just like, you know, nothing hair, you know, not there wasn't much of it, but just kind of over his ears, like Thurston Moore type hair and of Sonic Youth.
Yeah.
And he was a poker guy wearing like a work shirt, and he looked kind of cool, right? Then they come in with the makeover, and he's got like a purple suit jacket on and a skinny tie, and he's clean shaven, and he's got these black like jazz rim glasses, and he's got like all this like mousse in his hair, and his hair's all, you know, moussed out. And to me, he looked much worse. He looked just like a queer version of the guy. Yeah, they just gayed him up. That's all they did was gayed him up. He didn't look better, but he had, and so I said to Tom, you know, I said, he looks really sucky. He looked a lot better before. And Tom just goes and points to his chest. And then I realize he turns over part of his shirt, and he's pointing to his microphone.
He's wired.
Because I guess the gay Gestapo don't allow them to say, oh, I decorated his house nicely, but man, you dressed him up like a fruit. Maybe they don't allow that. So he wasn't allowed to say it, but he kept nodding. Like, boy, he does look bad. But he had a lot of confidence. So the straight guy, who I was calling Queer Bait, which I'm sure won't make it on the air, is a poker professional, has written a poker book, and so have I.
Yeah.
And we were going to have. So first we had to do B-roll. And this was going to be George Wallace, the comic. Yeah. You know, George Wallace, David Brenner, Susan Anton, and me. And we're all sitting around in the green room exchanging pleasantries. So my idea of exchanging pleasantries is Susan Anton goes, oh, you play bass with Mike Jones? You know, I once sang with Oscar Peterson. I said, oh, you sang with Oscar Peterson. And she says, yes. And she's talking about singing. She goes, I had friends who saw your show, and they really, really loved it. And, of course, when I'm making pleasantries, I said, and you're like born again crazy or something, right? That's my question to Sue. Like, you believe in God, right? So she's talking about, you know, art and, you know, the art of conversation. She's really doing a wonderful job. And I'm, of course, taking it right to religion. And then battle lines were drawn right away because George Wallace, yes. George Wallace.
You guys keep messing up these jokes. I love watching him struggle like that.
George Wallace says, oh.
The comic, George Wallace, right?
Yeah. Says, I'm religious. I'm religious. And Susan Anton goes, I'm religious. And I go to David Brenner, you're not religious. And David Brenner's trying to, like, follow the rules of conversation because we're on camera. This is B-roll for Queer Eye. And David Brenner goes, yes, I'm an atheist. Thank God. And I say, making nice conversation, you know, the thank God tag on that joke is kind of nice, David, but it's no longer funny that these people believe in God because religious people are killing too many people throughout the world. And then I smile and say, I met Ray Brown, Oscar Peterson's bass player, once. Did you ever work with him? So the cameras are rolling, and now the only one comfortable in the room is me. See, that's the way I attack. And then we go in to play poker, and they introduce us one by one. And we come out, and we sit down at the poker table. And the first thing I say is, I hope no one gets hurt. So we start playing, and the Queer Eye guys are so cheap. The production is so cheap, they did not buy a table that has the little hold card cameras in it. So what they did was every time we got dealt a hand, they walked around with a mini cam, and we had to hold up our cards to it. So it made the thing go really slowly. And Susan Anton and Tom, who's a guy from Queer Eye, had never played poker before, ever. So they have the cards in front of them with the ranking of the hands, you know, because there is a certain kind of mathematical skill you can have to say, well, you're more likely, you know, it's less likely to have four of a kind than it is to have three of a kind, you know, out of a deck of cards. But they're not even doing it. They got the things in front of them. But they had set it up so that it was all luck. And very important in the pre-show thing, in the B-roll, I made it very clear to people that this game was all luck, the way they'd set it up, because I had a good idea I was going to lose, and then that's going to come back and pay off, right? And then if you don't lose, you can always spin it and say, well, there's a lot of skill involved, actually. That was my plan, uh-huh. And it worked perfectly. But it was all skill, because they had a very low stake. We had like, you know, $2,000 in chips, and then the blinds were going up very quickly. So pretty much you go all in on every hand, and it's just a flip of a coin. So we're playing, and then I made a couple jokes that I want to say here, because we're on free FM. So on a free FM, we can say whatever we want, but on Queer Eye, probably not. So a couple of I want to say this first. I'll get to that. I want to say this first. I'm interrupting myself.
You were so excited today.
I'm very excited today because we have a guest coming into the studio after this to do some recording, and I don't want to invade his privacy, but I'm very excited that he's coming in. So I asked Tom, which I thought was pretty interesting. I said to Tom, "You've been doing Queer Eye for like a few years now, and you always have a straight guy. Have you had any of the straight guys that you thought might be a little funny, might be a little queer, and they were just trying to pass?" And he said, "Yeah, there were two guys that really seemed queer to us, and they were our straight guys." And I said, you know, so they're lying about their sexuality. So you have now created, on Queer Eye for a Straight Guy, you have created the one place in the USA where gays are not welcome. And that's on the Queer Eye show. So we're sitting there playing, and we're having a fine, fine time. And Tom played very well. He played Susan Anton, and we were having
played Susan Anton.
Yeah, we had a fine old time.
And you know, that means something different outside of the poker world, doesn't it?
Well, it does, you know. And I made those obvious jokes. Okay. Like when Tom, right. I said, "Hey, Tom, you flopped another queen." You know, that's not a surprise for you. And then I said to Susan Anton, "Good lay down." And that's the basis of your whole career, isn't it? And we're having fun like that.
And then that's when she hit you.
Then I made jokes that certainly we're not going to get on. So we're holding up our hands to the camera, you know. And I was shaking my hand very, very big so they couldn't get a shot of it, just shaking the two cards. And they said, "Would you please stop shaking?" And I got very, very serious. And I said, "I was trying to show my respect for Michael J. Fox, trying to show some solidarity." And the whole place went, "Ooh." And I knew that was going to get cut out. And they came over to me and said, "You know, we're trying to keep the, you know, we can't use stuff like that." So after I lost, who was left was Tom, David Brenner, and Susan Anton in that order. So, of course, when I lost, I'm a good loser. So I stood up and said, "Thank you very much for the game, faggot, Jew boy, slut." And I walked away, pretty much knowing that that wouldn't get on the air either. So I probably dominated the conversation. But when it's actually edited together, I won't be saying anything. A lot of obscenity, a lot of stuff. But it was fun. And then they gave this trophy, because it was Travelocity or something. So they had this gnome trophy they gave to the winner. And Susan Anton seemed pretty thrilled. She won. I'm giving that away. When you watch that, I said it was luck! It was luck! For the love of Christ, it was luck.
Susan Anton had never played, and she beat you guys and the professional poker player?
Yes, she did. No, she didn't beat the professional poker player. Professional poker player was commentating.
Okay.
He's commentating, yeah. And they gave her this big trophy, which meant the world to her, and then they asked us to sign it, and I wrote on the side, "There is no God, Pendulette." So I took the trophy, and change the meaning of it for. Because I am a rat bastard. That's the kind of guy I'm. Yeah, I'm very, very excited. 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. Or send your Gmails to penradio@gmail.com. I want to talk about Tiktaalik. If we can get any more
out of the fish. We have a couple calls on it, and we have several emails just that say woohoo.
Woohoo!
Two woohoo emails already.
Let's go to a call. Let's go to a call of somebody talking about Tiktaalik.
Let's talk to line 8. Let's talk to David.
Hey, David!
Hey.
What's up, man?
Well, I want to say woohoo as well. But more importantly, the first thing that came to mind when I read the news was, what happens to the creation scientists' argument now? They always say, show us the transitional forms. Well, here it is.
Right, but you know the way the creationists work. They're not scientists. They're religious people, so they will just go to the margins. They'll say God put that there to confuse us, right?
Yeah, that's true, but I also like what the guy said. He said, we found a missing link, which means now we have two more missing links.
What are the other two, David?
One on either side.
Yeah, of course.
We don't find have something that people. Connects two forms. Now you have to find the thing that connects that form to the one above and the one below.
Of course. And it's not like there aren't any other transitional fossils. You know what I mean? Let's talk. There's a lot of them.
There are a lot of transitional fossils. Are you there, David?
Yeah, I can barely hear you.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's the New York thing. We were just saying that this is not the first transitional fossil that's been found.
No, of course not.
No. And they're all over the place. And those did not take down the creationists. But all the same, woohoo!
Exactly.
Thanks a lot, David.
Hello,
that was a ringer.
Hey, David. We're going to have the woohoo t-shirts available,
yeah,
apparently.
I want to say in full disclosure, that David who called was a ringer.
Was it?
That was David Shaw.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought it might be.
Yeah, said
it was from Boston.
Sounded like David Shaw
from Boston.
Yeah, it was David Shaw. A good friend of ours, friend of ours.
The other crazy thing is that all fossils are transitional fossils, right? We're not stopped.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But that was still a really cool thing. I mean, if you wanted to pick one shut up.
Exactly.
One fossil that said shut up to the creationists, I think it would be Tiktaalik. Yeah. And I'm getting to like the name Tiktaalik. Even if I'm saying it wrong. Am I saying it wrong?
Tiktaalik. No, Tiktaalik. That's close enough.
That seems right. Okay, well, we're going to be back. We'll talk more about Tiktaalik. I want to talk more about Superman taking out the Klan. This is Penn Jillette, 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. PennRadio@gmail.com. Penn Radio. That cool jazz that sounds nothing like... jeez, I'm going to say that again. Vince Giraldi. No,
Giraldi.
Mike Jones is who that is. Penn Jillette on bass. Yeah, that's the Mike Jones big band playing the theme again. If you want to get some more of Mike Jones jazz, go to jonesjazz.com.
I think we have links up on PennRadio.com now.
Do you really?
I think so.
Just go to PennRadio.com. A lot of people have been asking about the cool jazz, that Playboy After Dark jazz we're playing here. And that's all Mike Jones. Mike Jones puts that together. He's the piano player in the Penn and Teller show. Fabulous. Probably the, the best bebop pianist alive. Wonderful, wonderful piano player. And I have the honor of playing bass with him. Every night before the show, I play about an hour of, about 45 minutes of bass. Because I have to go back and get ready for the big magic show that comes on after that. We had a monster bass player at the show last night. He's a symphony cat. And he said my time was good and intonation was good. So I was very, very flattered. But I get to play, and Mike Jones plays before the show, too. So if you're going to come to see the Penn & Teller show, all the billboards say 9 o'clock. You might want to come by at 8, because we're going to have an hour of jazz before that. So... National Geographic revealed that it has an ancient manuscript shedding new light on the relationship between Judas and Jesus, as it indicates that Jesus asked Judas to betray him. The key passage, this is like the Gnostic things, you know, they just dug this out. The key passage comes when Jesus tells Judas, go ahead, sacrifice me, I double dog dare thee. That's the that's the quote that National Geographic will be announcing on its show. A little bit more
double
about...
Double dog dare thee?
Double dog dare thee, yeah. Okay. That's what,
you know,
that's
so few people can translate this. There's no way to check.
Well, that's what they told, Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson, who does movies in Aramaic.
You know my take on
You know
this.
What he's doing now? No. Mel Gibson is now doing all of the Lethal Weapon movies in Aramaic.
He's a big following.
And he's changing the enemies to Jews. I think in the original one they were South Africans, but now he's putting payas on them and little. He's going to put on the little yarmulkes and payas. He's just doing it all. It can all be done digitally now so that he can fight the Jews in Aramaic as Lethal Weapon. So... You know, Eddie Gorodetsky, a brilliant comedian, once said that somebody was going to tell Mel Gibson that the Stooges were Jewish and ruin his whole life. Mel Gibson is a stooge nut. You know, he's a freak. And he's also, you know, clearly, I mean, artistically, I guess, anti-Semitic. I mean, certainly. I didn't see the Passion of the Christ. Because I had something better to do. I think I might have had laundry to do or something. So I didn't see the Passion of the Christ.
Dentistry.
But many people believe. I heard, you know, the ending was ruined for me, though. I hear he dies in the end.
Oh.
He does.
But
I didn't see the Passion of the Christ, but I hear it's a little bit anti-Semitic, or some people think that. And the Stooges, man, their names were Moses Horowitz, Jerome Horowitz, and Larry Feinstein. Okay, those are the names. Lawrence, I guess, Feinstein. Okay, that is Curly, Moe, and Larry. They were little Jewish men from Philadelphia. And David Brenner, when I was out with David Brenner, told me that his father was a vaudeville comic, David Brenner's father, and a juggler. And he was asked to work with the Stooges. Okay, But his grandfather, David Brenner's grandfather, his father's father, that's the way it works out so many times, was a rabbi and said that he couldn't work on the Sabbath. So from sundown on Friday to Saturday at sundown, he couldn't work at all. So the Stooges said, screw that. So they got someone else. They just gave him an eye gouge and sent him on his way. But that's got very little to do with Tiktaalik.
I just want to put forth my theory on the Gospel of Judas.
Okay.
I think his mother wrote it.
Yeah. Well, no, that's the thing, right? That's the thing. This is the only... Can I see this?
You're joking.
I'm going to pull the paper out. I get so excited about this. Okay, here's what it says. The Gospel of Judas turns Judas's act of betrayal into an act of obedience. Craig Evans, a New Testament scholar at the Acadia Divinity College, said in a National Geographic statement on the find, the sacrifice of Jesus' body of flesh, in fact, becomes saving. And so for that reason, Judas emerges as the champion, and he ends up being envied and even cursed and resented by the other disciples. Okay?
Yeah.
Did you see Great Balls of Fire?
No.
The Jerry Lee Lewis story.
Nope.
You didn't see Great Balls of Fire.
No.
It's exactly this. Exactly this. You always want to know who's writing the account you say. The Jerry Lee Lewis story, okay, Great Balls of Fire, the Jerry Lee Lewis story, has him with his second wife, right? And he's with his second wife, and they are having sex, right? And he's cuddling and holding his second wife. This is Dennis Quaid playing Jerry Lee Lewis. Not crazy enough to play Jerry Lee Lewis. You've got like James Woods to play Jerry Lee Lewis. But he's cuddling his wife, and all the time, Jerry Lee Lewis is going, this is the best sex I've ever had. You are the hottest. You are the most wonderful. I love you so much. You are the best. This is the best sex anyone could ever have. You are terrific. You are wonderful. You are. And then you look at the end, and who wrote the movie? Jerry Lee Lewis's second wife.
Second wife,
and
sure.
This is just showing you. You got to. I mean, if Yoko Ono does the John Lennon story, right? May Pang is going to be played by Ruth Buzzy. It's as easy as that. Whoever is in charge of it, that's what happens, you know? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, the Penn Jillette story produced by Penn Jillette. I think Brad Pitt should play Penn Jillette. I mean, that's the way... It's just insane. So Judas now has his point of view. I want to point out again that everything that comes out of these testaments, I'm hitting this paper like it was the testament. All of a sudden, I'm Lewis Black. All this stuff that comes out is three... Okay, The text was first mentioned in a treatise around 180 AD by a bishop, okay? But it was written about 300 years after it happened, okay? So all these details are someone casting their mind back, oh, about 300 years, which would be what, 1706?
Right.
Yeah, 1706. So this is like you sitting down right now, whoever you are listening, sit down at your computer right now and talk about the wonderful events of 1706.
That's right.
Okay, when you have much more writing, much more things going on, I have told stories right on this radio, okay, that happened 3 weeks ago that are entirely inaccurate in every single detail, okay? I get everything wrong. So now we got Judas, his story, written 300 years after the supposed events.
What was Columbus thinking? Well, on this day, Columbus was doing what he was told by his mom.
Well, 1492.
Yeah, well, a little off, but you know what I mean.
200 years beforehand. But, I mean, this is that's because we don't know anything that happened. That's what I want. 866-313-FREE.
What happened in 1706?
Tell us anything that happened in 1706. I mean, just call up and say, ooh, this new corn is tasty. My people call it maize. You know, just anything that happened. Do you know anything that happened in 1706? That's what we're talking about with these gospels. It's absolutely, completely as accurate as you can get 300 years after the fact, written by illiterate people who are starving. That's what you've got. Tiktaalik. Tiktaalik was around there.
I think we should take line five. Let's talk to Corrine. Corrine has a question for you.
Calm me down, Corrine. Calm me down.
Well, we would talk to
I've her. Been yelling, Corrine. Calm me down.
She's not there.
You're
there
brilliant, and you're such an education. You used a while back an expression called, you said, well, that's the God of the margin. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what on earth does that mean, the God of the margin? Because you made me think of a poem by Rudyard Kipling called Gods of the Copybook Heading. And if I don't sound too pedantic, he wrote many poems about God that are like God's in his heaven, all's right with the world. And then he writes this very disturbing poem called Gods of the Copybook Heading, where basically he says, as sure as water will wet us, as sure as fire will burn, the gods of the copybook headings with terror and slaughter return. And I never thought of that poem for so long. So may I ask you what you meant by God of the margins?
God of the margins is a shorthand that's used for the fact that when you start out pre-enlightenment and pre-science, then God has the answer to everything. It's the beginning. It's the beginning. You know, God created Earth in 7 days, and the Earth is flat, and the sun goes around the Earth, and the heavens are just suspended, you know, above us, and there's really no universe. And then Galileo and Copernicus come along, and they say that the Earth goes around the sun. And then the religious people just say, well, that part of the Bible is metaphorical, but the other parts of the Bible are still true. And then Darwin comes along and really has this, you know, survival of the fittest, and has evolution. And then the creation myth kind of goes away, and they go, well, that was just a myth, but this other stuff is really true. So what you want to picture is the belief is all happening in the margins of science. As science expands, they keep pushing God out to the parts where they just where they can still say, okay, we don't know what happened in the first 100 trillionth of a second, and that's where God is. God used to be all 7 days of the creation. Now he's moved down to the first 100 trillionth second. So that's what it means, God of the margins.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
So brilliant. But may I just say one thing about Galileo?
Sure.
Galileo supposedly had permission from his archbishop to publish his work, but then when he was called on the carpet for it, they conveniently could not find that letter of permission. I think it just surfaced I think in the last 80 years or so.
Yeah, there was that. They kind of, the Catholic Church kind of forgave Galileo in a definition of a day late and a dollar short. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you so much. You're great. Goodbye.
Thanks a lot. Tiktaalik, woohoo! We'll be back after this. 866-313-FREE. That's 3733, penradio at gmail.com. That's fast. That's Mike Jones Alone. Mike Jones Alone playing the Penn Jillette theme. We're on the Penn Jillette radio show. This is Penn Jillette, 866-313-3733, pennradio@gmail.com. What happened in 1706? Well, concluding that Emperor Lysias of Ethiopia had abdicated by retiring to a monastery, a council of high officials appoint Tekle Hamanot, Emperor of Ethiopia. Born in 1706, it was Benjamin Franklin.
Right.
As you know, Benjamin Franklin was born in a manger, and the star of Bethlehem moved over that.
Bethlehem.
And,
it's a little different than the one of Bethlehem.
Star of Benjamin. And Johann Pachelbel died. He was hit by a cannon. He died March 3rd. I can't believe
you did that joke.
I did. I want to do that joke. That's the only reason I said it. So what I'm saying is 300 years after, that's what you're right about. What else is here? Researchers have unearthed evidence that dental drilling dates back to 7,000 B.C. A team of archaeologists unearthed at least 9 skulls with perfectly drilled holes in their teeth in a Pakistani graveyard. The skulls, which were 9,000 years old, were discovered near a pile of 10,000-year-old magazines. So that was the dentist waiting area right there. Now, they don't think that they were drilling cavities, you know.
They're just doing it for decoration?
Yeah, they were doing it for decoration. So they deciding that, oh, we could drill and actually help people instead of just hurting them. Or maybe it was just torture. Maybe this was like, you know, Marathon Man of 9,000 years ago.
They did both, actually, apparently, according to this one.
Okay.
Although dentists are very impressed with how nice the circles are. They did very good holes, apparently. Mm-hmm. And they can do it very, very quickly, which I would assume is because of the lack of anesthesia.
Yeah. They had like a flint, right?
Yeah.
And then they had like a bow that wrapped
string,
around.
Yeah.
You know that thing that you're supposed to use in Boy Scouts, that bow thing?
Yeah, to build a fire, sure.
Never works. Did it ever work for you?
Yes, it did.
Everything works for you.
I had a different upbringing than you did.
Yeah.
I was raised by the Native Americans.
Everything works for you, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
Yeah. Nothing ever worked for me.
I'm sorry.
I had a Barry Sterno in the ground to get a fire started.
That's why you've hired me.
You wrapped a little piece of rope on a bow around a thing.
Bent the stick, build a fire. Just like that, yeah.
Back and forth.
Instead of this, that hand thing, you know, where you do it with your hands, never works. But this works really well. You can do it with your shoelaces and a stick.
Oh, man. When the apocalypse comes, you're the guy to know, right?
You want to be hanging with me, yeah.
I mean, if all civilization was destroyed, how long before you'd have us have email again? How long before we get email again?
I'm not so good at electricity.
Yeah. This is Michael Goudeau MacGyver here. You're not good at all with electricity.
Not good with electricity. I get electrocuted often. Not electrocuted, but shocked very often.
Do you really?
I do.
Yeah.
Because I keep thinking I'm going to figure it out. I'm flying kites. I don't have it set up right. I get shocked. Everything I do, I get electrocuted.
I want to talk about Superman taking down the Klan because today it was just announced that our good friends at South Park have won a Peabody Award.
That's quite an honor.
I guess so. Although, would you say Battlestar Galactica also got
the Shield and Battlestar Galactica also won it.
I have an interview here, and this is from what? Truth Dig. Isn't it Truth Dig?
Truth Dig.
Yeah, Truth Dig is the website. Because I'm copping this, I should let you know where it's from. Truth Dig is kind of a really hardcore liberal hippie type thing. My liberal hippie friend sent me quotes from this. But Sam Harris, who wrote that, I don't have the beginning of this article. Do you? What's the name of his book?
The End of Faith.
The End of Faith. Sam Harris.
Great book.
Great, great book. Except for this little bit of Buddhism he throws in there. So one of these days we'll
have... In
the
last chapter, he lost his mind.
One of these days we'll have Sam Harris on, and we'll talk to him about
that.
But in the meantime, they've asked him this question. This is Truth Dig on the Sam Harris interview. The whole interview is fabulous. But the thing that really popped for me because of the South Park Scientology thing, the thing that really popped for me is that... they ask him, what is the most likely way that American society, if not the rest of the world, will eventually abandon irrational faith? And his answer is, this is Sam Harris talking, I think this is a war of ideas that has to be fought on 100 fronts at once. There is not one piece that is going to trump all others. But I think we should not underestimate the power of embarrassment. The book Freakonomics briefly discusses the way the Ku Klux Klan lost its subscribers, and the example is instructive. A man named Stetson Kennedy almost single-handedly, it seems, eroded the prestige of the Ku Klux Klan in the 1940s by joining them and then leaking all of their secret passwords and goofy lingo to the people who were writing the Adventures of Superman radio show. Week after week, there were episodes of Superman fighting the Klan, and the real Klan's mumbo-jumbo was put up all over the airways for people to laugh at. Kids were playing Superman versus the Klan on their front lawn. The Klan was humiliated by this and was made to look foolish, and we went from a world in which the Klan was a legitimate organization with tens of millions of members, many of whom were senators and even one president, to a world in which there are now something like 5,000 Klansmen. It's basically a defunct organization. Public embarrassment. I mean, it's amazing how great that is. I mean, Superman fought the Klan and Superman won. And I think that you can't read that without thinking about South Park doing the Tom Cruise in the closet episode, where they put on the screen, this is what Scientologists actually believe. The more you talk about Praise Xenu, the more you talk about the Scientologists believing that all the souls of all the Thetans were put into volcanoes, atomic bombs were exploded behind them on Earth, then they were forced to watch movies of Jesus. The more you say stuff like that, the more they become humiliated. That's why freedom of speech is so important, and it's really important for, you know, the Turner Diaries and for all the Nazi stuff and for the Elders of Zion tracks to be out there and read by everybody because of the humiliation. This is stupid jive mumbo jumbo, and the more we laugh at it. I mean, it's great that the battle for civil rights was fought on all these fronts, but one of the fronts was the Superman radio show. And that just thrills me that maybe 50 years from now we'll be reading that Scientology is completely defunct because of, you know, of Cartman, Kyle, and him, you know, Stan, you know,
yeah,
that they helped, Kenny helped too, bring down this nutty organization. Do we have any calls you want to take? You want to play Godot Roulette?
We can try to line 13. I think we should talk to Eric on line 13.
Hey, Eric, how you doing, man?
Hey, Pat, how are you? Love the show.
Thank you so much. What's up, boss?
What also was invented in 1706 was public stoning in America. Traditionally, what they would do in the Middle East is, in order to stone somebody, they'd bind their hands, bury them to their waist, and people would stand around in a circle and throw stones at the individual until they expired.
But wait a minute, standing in a circle throwing stones is a very bad idea. Don't you hit the people on the other side of the circle?
Yeah, but the person is down, so you're actually aiming down. So,
good, that's important.
You have to be pretty good at throwing the stone because, you know, you will have some distance between the actual individual and the person who's doing the stoning.
And there's also some bouncing. You don't want to bounce and hit a friend in the eye.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay, but go on with your story. I interrupted you.
Now, in the Americas, what they would do is they would strap them to a post with their hands in front of them, and they would be standing towards that one person. Let's say they stole something, and that person would throw the stone at the individual once again until they expired. But what had happened was, in the stoning process, somebody had broken free with the post, and in throwing the stone, they hit the stone with that actual post, and then it was like a hit and run. And that's how baseball was invented in 1706.
That was a long way to go.
I'm a Scientologist, so I lie every day. So
what's
I
that?
Figured the only way I could get on the radio was to make up some kooky story like that. So.
It's a wonderful one. Thank you so much, Eric.
You're welcome, Ben.
Thank you so much. That is, I think what we just showed was the way the Gospels are written. That was the Gospel of Eric, Eric of baseball, the new kind of stoning. You know, they do that in one of the, is it Freddie? No, I think so. What's the other one? Mike Meyer, I guess, in Halloween,
uh-huh.
I guess. There's one of them, like Halloween 13 or something, or 10 or 8 or something. A number. What I mean by
Halloween followed by a number. Not
Halloween
the first
followed
one.
By a number, right. Not the first one. They do find the guy, and all the army guys surround him and hold guns on him. And there is a circular firing squad in this. And there's no, I guess in those science fiction movies, that's not a science fiction movie, the horror movies, there's no regard whatsoever for safety, circular firing squad. Yeah, that the Sam Harris thing is great. Now, Sam Harris is somebody who I share this with, was a kind of a quiet atheist. Not that I was ever quiet, but not as aggressive before 9/11, and then kind of flipped out. And that's when he wrote the End of Faith. Is he ever going to come to the Randy thing in Vegas? Is he going to be next year's or
not
something?
Not that I know of.
They should get him out. You know, they had they've had such great people there.
Well, I'm going to track him down and get him on our show.
Yeah, you should. You should. And I was going to talk to the woman that did the atheist.
She hasn't written back recently. She was out of town.
She found out about us or something?
Yeah, she listened to the show. Hey, wait, they are atheists. I hate them. That might be it.
All the cool kids hate them. I hate them too. Yeah, I don't know why she hasn't gotten back. I'm kind of hurt. Because I thought this would be a big deal for her, you know, gets to come on our show. We have, you know, we treat people with respect, you know, for the most part, you know. But coming up next week, we guarantee have Chris Bliss on, the man who did the viral video juggling to the Beatles. He'll be on next week. And I'm going to tell a lot of stories next week, too. I'm going to do some Penn Jillette story time next week. What else we got today? I have a big pile of stuff to look at today, and now I'm wondering.
We haven't talked about the post-rapture post.
We haven't. Yeah, you wanted to talk. Yeah, I see that.
You can take it. Sure.
I'm sorry. Am I taking it from you?
No.
There's a postrapture.com. Postrapture.com is an organization that if the rapture comes, and for those of you who don't know, who haven't read the Left Behind books, the rapture will come, and then all the religious people, all the born-agains, will be lifted from wherever they are up into heaven, and the rest of us will live on Earth during Armageddon and die and suffer.
But we get their cars and stuff, though, right?
Yeah, of course. You get all their stuff.
Cool.
That's the greatest thing. And there's, you know, it's like, what is it, 11% of the population will go.
It's going to be great.
But unfortunately, the 11% of the population that's going to go in the rapture are not the people that have the cool stuff. It's not Bill Gates that's
going
to go in the rapture. It's not Steve Jobs that goes in the rapture. Who goes in the rapture are a bunch of brain dead hicks with crayons. So there will be a huge glut on the crayon market.
Weight will be lifted.
If you feel Armageddon is coming, do not invest in Crayola. I know the guy before me does the economics thing. I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of crayons after the rapture. What else do those people own? Are there any really rich born-again Christians? There must be.
Sure.
I guess the Domino's Pizza guy. But is there anybody else besides Domino's Pizza guy? There's nobody else. So there's not going to be good stuff.
Pizza Hut will step up and fill that slack.
Exactly. So postrapture.com is a place where after the you can leave messages, and they will be delivered after the rapture.
Hand delivered
after the rapture to anybody you want. They will give them everything. We'll have crayons and we'll have Utah. That's all. Utah will just be emptied out. But Utah is pretty much emptied out anyway.
They're probably not part of that.
They're probably not part of the rapture. No. So post-rapture will deliver it. And the way they can assure you that they will deliver after the rapture is because it's run by atheists. So these are atheists who don't believe in the rapture and therefore will not go to heaven in the rapture, and therefore they will hand deliver your messages to your loved ones after the rapture. That's postrapture.com. Tomorrow, you know, we should really talk about that LASIX at home site and see if anybody knows. It's got to be a joke,
but
it's a fabulous, fabulous joke. Postrapture.com, Sam Harris. Also
Tiktaalik.
Tiktaalik. And 1706 was also the time that pi was just coming into real importance. We've all come full circle. I've got an exciting day ahead of me. This is Penn Jillette. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Keep talking to me after the show. I like seeing who I'm talking to. Bye-bye.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.